The comments within the following podcast are those of any show hosts and not representative of any company in which the show hosts may represent. Welcome to the Tech Podcast. This is podcast number 291 of this podcast series. My name is Jared Reimer, and I would like to welcome those of you on CastBox to the podcast theme of what this podcast is about. And we cover everything tech, from blindness related to breaches to Google cars and everything in between. You will not find much in the way of strong language, but from time to time there may be. But we'll make sure to let you know when that's the case. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, email or iMessage tech@menvi.org. And full contact information is available at the end of the program or by visiting my tech blog at technologygjaredrimer.net. Section number one of this program talks about Facebook and its recent bug. Several Security Now episodes ago, it was talked about, and I had to wrap my head around it and then put something together. We have two sections dealing with Braille transcription, and this was recently done as I wanted to do something in regards to a new course that I'm taking. It's Braille transcription course and my thoughts, and Braille transcription course and six key input and my thoughts. Next, implants or chip and on chips or cables. I'm a little confused on this because of a thing that I heard on Security Now talking about implants on, you know, motherboard chips and other types of hardware, and a real interesting story which I don't quite get, but maybe a hypothetical something rather. My thoughts on Microsoft's mistake, and this was a big mistake, in regards to the ordeal of a Windows update that has had an interesting problem, that is, deleting everything out of the documents folder and leaving it completely empty. Microsoft went ahead and removed the update after it was discovered. They have fixed the issue, but boy, that's a first. Finally, for those in the blind community know about VoRail, the social network for the blind, I recently picked up some news and pass this news along to you. And my final thoughts and contact information is at the very end of the program. I hope that each and every one of you enjoy the program as much as I have putting it together for you. And I hope that you will leave your thoughts and comments and we can have a lively discussion. Who knows? Maybe you can be on this podcast and let me know if that interests you. Let's start with Facebook, and I hope that you will enjoy the program. Thanks for listening. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Podcast 291. Well, I said I was going to cover this on the podcast, and there are many, many articles, so linking to them is beyond the question now. I also listened to GRC's Security Now in regards to what I'm about to say. But this is a little bit confusing, and I'm going to do the best I can to go ahead and mention how I understand this. And this is in regards to the Facebook bug that came to light that has been fixed, and it caused a lot of people to get logged out. When you log in, you're given a token. And at some point, the token expires. But on Facebook, it doesn't. And that is fine and well and good. Except when they found a bug in this platform where you can change something and be completely logged in as a different user. And from what I understood of this, it seemed as though this happened when videos were present. So, I, not very clear on this. This is going to get quite interesting as time goes on. Like I said, it is a little confusing, and I've thought about this for a while, and it's still confusing to me. But this is the way I understand it. No account information was ever taken. So that's a good thing. They're not saying that you should change your password, but if you feel that way, you must do so. If you don't feel that it's necessary, then don't. But I did not hear that it is necessary to do so or that it's even recommended. So, hopefully we can learn more, and if anyone wants to contribute how they understood the bug that was recently discussed, then I'd love to hear from you. My email address is tech, T-E-C-H, at menvi.org. Hello, folks. Welcome back to the podcast. I started this podcast and then I was supposed to do a segment. And then, of course, nothing was really set in stone for the podcast. But I've been thinking about some thoughts as I start the Braille transcription course, and I've been thinking about this a long time before recording this segment, and I'm first going to go ahead and talk a little bit about the course. And then I'm going to give my thoughts on the first lesson in which I've submitted. Now, this transcription course is for Braille transcribing. And for those who are new to the world of blind usage, there is now technology out there to produce Braille besides a Perkins Braille writer, which is the oldest Braille writing tool out there. In fact, the transcription course indicates that it is best to use a Perkins Braille writer if you do not have software to help you. Now, the first 12 lessons of the course are to be done in 6-key entry, and they will allow you to use a slate and stylus, which is the probable oldest piece of technology out there. And they link to a couple of websites where you can buy material such as a Perkins Braille writer, Braille paper, and slate and styli. I've decided to go about this course using software. And they are telling us that we need to do the running head on our own. Okay, fine. But I also know that I need to learn the software. Now, when I grew up, way before podcasting, I learned a program called Megadots, which was discontinued in 2015 because they did not want to implement the Unified English Braille Code, which we are now starting to use. So, off to the hunt for software. And before anybody starts trashing me, I have used Duxbury. And at that time, it was under limited usage, and I was not impressed with the software. Now, if I have a chance to use it again, I would be happy to give it another look. But I did not choose that piece of software, not because I didn't trust Duxbury, who ended up buying Megadots years ago. I like the idea of what they've got, and the product has been around just as long as Megadots has. As I said, in my limited usage, I did not like the idea of what it had to offer. In fact, I found it quite a bit interesting to learn, and I needed to do stuff and didn't really have time to learn it, but I would be willing to give it a try, but not at a cost of almost $1,000, and I don't know the exact price. It could be less than that, and it's something that I'm not interested to do at the moment. I knew of a product called EditPC, and I knew that the name was changed, and I will get into the name of the program in a minute. And I actually know the developer of the program through my network, the Music Education Network for the Visually Impaired. And so I emailed somebody, said, you know, what's the name of that program? I want to get a program, and I don't really have time to learn Duxbury, and I want to do stuff with it. And I was given the name and the website, and I contacted the fella, and I said, you know, here's what my needs are. Here's what I'm trying to do. And here is what I need to be able to do. And I would prefer something free, but if I have to pay, I'll pay. And he got back to me some days later, and we struck up a conversation, and he said, you know, this is the deal. And he was talking to me about various programs, including Perky Duck, which Duxbury has, and Braille Blaster from the American Printing House, and of course the program that I ultimately chose for what I needed to do with the collaboration with Braille Institute in Los Angeles. The program is called Braille 2000, and I will tell you right now that Braille 2000 is not perfect in the accessibility department like other pieces of software out there. The developer's name is Bob Stepp. He is on the MENVI advisory committee.
One moment, please.
So I've known of him for many years. And I chose his program because, number one, he's fully sighted. Number two, he's gone to transcribers meetings and understands the different codes, and he has
minutes ago. Veteran NHL forward Nate Thompson celebrates life-changing milestone, clapping hands, right horns pointing arrow.
A nice looking program. I thought of choosing Braille 2000 first of all because of my affiliation with him, but also, although I did not use the software, I did get a diskette of EditPC, which was its former name. The former company, for those who may be familiar with it, is Computer Application Specialties Corporation, or CASC. I'm not going to take you through Braille 2000 right now. There is a version 1 in circulation, and there's a version 2 in beta, which is actually being actively used by transcribers because of the new UEB code changes. Sadly, there are some accessibility issues with this program, and Bob has been interested to make this program accessible to blind and visually impaired Braille transcribers. Bob has indicated to me that he has had some input to make it better, but the people providing that feedback have not been heard from in a while. I have provided quite a bit of feedback to Bob, which he has taken to heart and has a long list of things to fix. At this point, I am not going to spend a lot of time on Braille 2000, but I am going to spend time talking about the Braille transcription course and my thoughts. I'm also going to talk a little bit about the course in general, and that'll all be coming up as the podcast continues. I'm Jared Reimer. This is Podcast 291. By talking a little bit about the course. Mind you, this is coming from a blindness perspective, not as a full-on course. I understand what they're trying to get at, and I'm not going to sit here and trash the course. First of all, I understand why they want people to use 6-key entry. 6-key entry can be demonstrated, and I will go ahead and do that with Braille 2000 in a little bit. But before I do, I want to talk about the fact that as someone who is blind their whole life, you know Braille really well. You know how to write it. You've read it. You've been taught it. I am curious, although I am not going to, at this point, make any suggestions because I really understand where the course is going. But follow me a second. If you write an email to the address provided and you tell them you are a Braille reader, which is what I've done, and they tell you two things. First of all, put the running head in yourself. And second of all, you have to use 6-key entry. Why? The first, I don't know how many lessons teach the alphabet and contractions. For a Braille reader to go through all of that, in my opinion, is not necessarily a bad thing, but that is only because of the fact that those of us who have learned Braille before now have to learn UEB. So I don't necessarily find it to be a bad idea, but what I find to be an issue is two things. First of all, while I do know the ASCII code of Braille, i.e. comma for a capitalized letter, less than for a GH and greater than for an AR, for examples, I don't find that writing in 6-key entry for my own personal use very productive unless I'm using a note taker such as the Braille Sense or any other adaptive note takers on the market that do a Braille writer style input. I also have a Braille writer here, but yet it doesn't work anymore. I had it repaired, it worked, then I went to use it to write something down and it was back to the way it was. And that was because I don't use it anymore. For me to get it repaired at this point, for me personally, is not worth the trouble to do it, just for 2 years of heavy use for it not to work anymore. I understand the aspect of the six key entry to teach a sighted person how Braille works. I completely understand the idea behind it, and I'm not about to knock it. Except that if you are a blind individual, and we can discuss this, I'm not about to have the course changed just because of my views. Again, I completely understand what they are trying to do. But for someone who's blind like me, and possibly other blind people who learn Braille, I'm curious to find out if you have agreed with my idea that doing six key entry on a computer style keyboard is a waste of time when you are going to type anyway and rely on the software to do the transcription. Granted, I do understand why they want us to learn it that way, because if the software makes a mistake, we have the capability of going into the Braille and making the corrections so that we have good quality Braille. And that is the aspect that I think they're trying to get us to understand. Not that they don't trust the software. It's that they want individuals, whether blind or sighted, to get the aspect of typing in six key entry should the need arise. Menvee's very own Richard Tisch, who was the Braille Music Division Braillist for the Music Education Network for the Visually Impaired, as well as the former Southern California Conservatory of Music, which sadly closed its doors in 2014, has told me that he relies on six key entry because that's how he was taught when he got certified. And he uses it exclusively when doing Braille work because he can do it faster than typing. I completely understand this aspect of that, and I'm not knocking the fact that some people work better in six key entry. What the course is trying to do as well is to teach the sighted person, whether they use a Braille writer or a computer, what the Braille is supposed to look like. I completely understand that. And for a blind user, we already know what it feels like. But we also need to learn the formatting. We take Braille for granted that we know what a paragraph is supposed to look like, and we know what a transcriber's note and various other aspects of Braille look like. But do we really understand the formatting of it? I never really understood the formatting of Braille. I knew that paragraphs were indented, but I didn't know that it was a 3-1 cell, where the first cell of the paragraph was indented to the third space. That is why I think it's kind of cool in the idea that we, as a blind community, should take the painstaking aspect of doing six key entry on a computer because of the fact that you can learn exactly how it is formatted and how the keys work on a computer keyboard to make that work. As some people, including myself, don't really understand. I do understand somehow how it works, but I didn't really understand the ins and outs of how it's all formatted. Let's go ahead now and demonstrate a little bit of six key input. So let's go ahead and run the program. And I am also going to have JAWS available for you to hear exactly what I'm doing. So this is JAWS 2018.
Windows M.
I am going to launch the Braille 2000 version that I am currently using for the Braille transcription course.
B, Braille 2000, B, BRL 2000B.
I also have version 1 in demo mode. Braille 2000 version 2 is known as BRL 2000B. You can have both version 1 and version 2 installed. Only one version can be ran at one given time.
Enter. Dialog. Launching Braille 2000. Stop button. Backup and sync. The document processing edition.
So, by default, we're in print mode.
Period.
Alright. So.
Enter.
I'll go two lines. And by default, the system would remove blank lines. And I could see visually on the screen that the sentence was written in the third cell. And there are some tricks that I could use to make sure that's the case. I'm not about to demo the program per se. But let me change the view so that you can hear how this is done. Before I do that, I'm going to go ahead and let you know that when I read the line back, you'll hear it in code. We're going to go to view.
Alt V, window, view a submenu.
View
v,
as.
ASCII A, Braille checked, B.
It says Braille checked, but I was in print mode. So let's go to Braille mode.
Enter, leaving menus. Blank, IKT, ICDAT to CH, WS4.
Okay.
Home, I, comma, I.
I, that's comma I, capital I.
Space, quote, K, space.
No, the quote is the dot 5.
T, space.
T is that?
Comma, I, space.
Capital I?
C, space.
Can?
D, space.
Do?
A, space.
A?
T, E, slash.
The slash is an ST.
Space.
So that's test?
T, O, space.
2?
S, E, E, space.
C?
H, left, space, left bracket.
The bracket is the OW, so how?
Space, west, space.
This? Is the question mark?
Quote, double S.
Dot 5 is the quote, WS.
4.
And the 4 is period.
Blank.
Now, when you type, you're going to use SDF and JKL. Okay? So, capital
L.
This
J space
is
H equals 1 blank question J space J space
A
F space
T test
JKJ space
of
S
the
D space
Brailing
F D S J space
capability
F F J F F J D K J space
of
F space L L
Braille
F D D space J
2000
D J D J space
as
K space F space
demo
F F S F space
for
D S D space
actually
R O F
I wonder if
J space
for podcast
S K K J F S space L
2
F J F space S S space L J F F space
podcast
L J K F J F J D space.
Now you did not hear. All you heard was F and J and L and maybe a D or an S. That's not very useful.
Enter.
Now, if I
Alt with view at break print P enter
go
leaving
to print
menus.
And go
T A I S S A S T E S T O S P O D C S T space 2 not 4 4 1 space I S space R E G R D S space O S T A E space P I S T space T N I I S space A Y O U T space A S E E C T space O S space B R A I L E space 2 Z Z 0 space A S space I T S space S E space A S A space B R A I L E space T R N N R A A N A N A T O S space L O F T W A R E period.
Okay, now let's go back to the other line.
Layout asked is a test for pop this is a test for podcast 291 in regards to the pint. Layout aspect of is a test N T N I P tab P I R is a test for pop this and blank. Blank as a demo for podcast 291 off tech podcast.
Okay, so
is a test off Brailing Capis. And blank is a TH N I S space. Blank space S O S blank S I S S O ta A blank. A ta O S blank S O S O blank A blank S blank A tab A blank space blank blank this a test off Brailing capability of Braille Home.
Okay, so it didn't like something.
Tab T E S T tab O F T A E tab.
It didn't like of the together because I'm in UEB.
Alt V window view is ASCII Braille checked B enter leaving menus.
But
a T blank home quest blank space blank.
Why is this?
Blank. I K T I C blank. A T B R L capable. Home.
Oh.
Question comma.
I see exactly what it did, and this is part of something that I've noticed. So I'm quickly going to fix this paragraph.
Alt E menu. Leaving menu is escape. Oops. Alt tab. Gold alt tab.
I'm gonna quickly
alt,
fix
men,
this.
P, page control P P paragraph style P enter leave tab name styles names tab name styles description edit. Tab system radio tab custom radio 1113151719 radio enter BRL 2.
There we go. I'm not gonna tell you all what I just did. You sort of heard it, but it basically reformatted my paragraph the way that it needed to.
BJJJZA demo equals poka B podka blank.
And this
space space
paragraph 2
space 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 space, space, comma.
There we go. It was a quick thing. I'm not going to go into doing it, but I could also translate this file into eBay, where of the was allowed to be put together, but in UEB, we're going to learn in this course that a lot of the contractions that we use are done a little bit differently, and a lot of the rules have changed. But I'm not necessarily doing this as part of the course right now. This is for the demo for this podcast. So, as you could tell, I am having some issues because sometimes I use the arrow key. Now, I'm going to show you this, and this is something that I've put a question into.
PRZA blend. Blend, 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 blend.
I can go.
Blend, 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 blend.
And in the middle, the mouse will tell me. Well, it's not doing it, but.
Blend, 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 blend.
It'll basically go to the bottom of the page.
Top of five.
Now let's change the code to English Braille.
Alt menu code C. Enter comma tab change button space. Shift tab Braille code open Portuguese provisional guidance. Home English unified. French. English enter shift tab even if code unchanged tab tab option combo box contracted shift tab even if code unchanged shift tab regenerate braille radio button check tab change button space shift tab braille code combo box English unified French English unified enter confirm range up down center BR top I blank a T the BRL capable Y BRL BJJJ a T the BR home que comma quest space A space E slash space left T H E space.
He didn't like that. Alright, well.
Alt V window view as ask braille checked B leaving men top of five.
Alright, so.
Alt enter leaving men tab braille tab option combo box contract tab change space
change.
Shift tab combo open mana.
Banner.
Enter tab apply to button alt plus tab cursor shift tab edit combo one ice UEB con one of one shift tab change button shift tab option combo box contracted shift tab braille code combo box English one of seven
English contracted
shift tab even if code unchanged tab edit comp tab inlay button tab apply to button tab cursor location button space confirm range up enter BRL.
So now I change the code.
Top of blank a T the BRL capable Y BRL. Quest space A space E E slash space left pair T H E space B R L plus space. Plus L R B space E A T left paren.
I don't want a left paren. I want.
K. Space left paren space T. Space left paren K. Left paren space left paren. L.
Love.
Left paren space. Left paren. S. J space.
Five.
Space F. Space. T.
Of the.
BRL BJJJZA demo equals POCA B of.
See, now I understand some of what this is, and I'd go character by character.
Alt V. Win. View. Ask. Braille. Print. P. Enter. Leave this a test of the braille incapability of. Blank. This a test of the braille incapability. Home. A. I. S. Space. A. Space. I. S. Space. S. Space. A. Braille 2000 as a demo for Podcast 291 off. N. E. H. T. F. O. Tab. O.
Okay. Of the.
Selected. Off. Tab. Podcast. Blank. This a test for podcast 291 in regards to the print layout aspect of Braille 2000. This a test for podcast 291 in regards to the.
So it likes to the.
Print as a Braille translation software.
Well, that's because I wrote it in Braille. In print.
Blend.
But you get the idea.
Blend as a Braille translation software.
And I'm not trying to be perfect here. But it can work.
Alt F4, no N, Gold Wave Windows N.
It works. What I want people to understand are two things out of this demo and talk. That even though you don't have a Braille display and you're blind, you can make it work. You just have to follow what they're saying. I didn't talk about the running head issue. I didn't talk about other issues, although you did see one of them that I have. And I'm sure that this can all be worked out for the blind transcriber. But there are methods discussed to me that I'm willing to share as I go along through the course. If you take this course using the method that is called correspondence, you do not need to submit lesson one, but they want you to read lesson one. And lesson one of the course talks about the alphabet. And the Braille alphabet and numbers. Lesson 2, which I've already submitted, is going to be on capitalization, paragraphing, page numbering, punctuation, period, question mark, exclamation point, comma, semicolon, colon, hyphen, dash, dollar sign, cent sign, and at sign, as well as numbers with punctuation. And this course is, by the way, being taught in Unified English Braille, and I found this quite interesting because on one of the sentences, it had a transcriber's note in Unified English Braille code on one of the items, before one of the items to be submitted, that said that these three letters were to be in all, you know, were to be capitalized in this word. And it was funny when Bob was like, oh, you know, they put a transcriber's note. I'm like, yeah. They did. Lesson 3, which I'm in the midst of doing my assignment for, is going to be quotation marks, apostrophe, parentheses, square brackets, omission, low line, underscore, slash, and I think that's about it. And I like the idea of learning about these, except that this document is written in UEB. So you are already giving me some of the answers. And Like, for example, item 6, which I still need to braille out for my teacher, says all budget items in brackets see Joe's report on fiscal policies, comma, www.economology.org, close bracket, presuppose a rigid economy. And I just find that interesting because you think that for a Braille reader, when you see the sign, you're just going to Braille out that sign in 6-key input, right? I just found that so interesting. And also, on lesson 2, number 8, two words were in English, you know, uncontracted Braille. And I went ahead and contracted them because that's how I'm taught to write. Taught to write in contracted Braille. Telling you a little bit more about the course, lesson 4 talks about alphabetic word signs, contractions for and, for, of, the, with. And so this is going to get interesting because then they'll talk about the fact that words like in the, for the, of the, with a, are more than likely not in Unified English Braille, are not put together like they are in the English version. And I'd be interested to see if I'm right because of the way that it translated my document as a test run. And so I understand what they're trying to do. They want us to learn the rules, braille them out as we learn them, and then get more into the course, starting with lesson 13, using the software as intended to produce documents and show them we understand different types of formatting. And lesson 20 is the final lesson where we have to produce a 35-page manuscript where I'm not going to give it away, but I was sort of looking at it going, let's see what they want. And I'm not going to tell you exactly what they want, and I'm not going to read it word for word anyway, but they do want a mailed copy. And it is definitely going to get very interesting. And I find that learning this type of thing is kind of cool because, number one, then I could do transcribing work and get paid for it. And number two, I could then go ahead and earn a living too. So it is definitely going to get a very interesting over time. And I'm learning and have learned that the paragraph format anyway is a 3-1 cell. And there are various rules, you know, like transcriber's notes are to be brailled as is, or on a separate line where they have like a list of various things at that point, like map omitted or something, they can put that on a like a cell 5 or 7 or something, or it's more centered, or, you know, however the transcriber does it. You learn about transcriber's notes, how they're done, you know, the special symbols pages, you know, all of that stuff. And so definitely something to be of value. And I'm actually looking forward to this. This is going to be very, very interesting as time progresses, where I am going to have fun with it. Now I think I'm just bored. It's like, I know these contractions, but I see what they're trying to do. They're trying to teach a 6-key input because transcription software can make a mistake, and we should be able to understand the code well enough to be able to correct it, and you should proofread your work, and that's what it's about. And that I'm not dogging them for, but to learn every contraction when you learn them, I don't necessarily agree. I think there should be a different approach, but I'm not sure exactly how to do that. But I like the idea of what they have. And as you saw, typing in 6-key using assistive technology isn't the best solution, at least for me anyway. I'm curious if you have done transcribing work and you've used 6-key input using the computer keyboard. How was it for you? Did you have a Braille display? If you had a Braille display, you have that assistance. But what if you didn't? You can get in contact with me by email or iMessage at tech, that's T-E-C-H, at menvi.org. And I will definitely be awaiting a response from each and every one of you. Let's continue with some more tech. Got an interesting discussion about the recent Security Now, which caught my attention. And you can go find articles on your own, but we'll continue with that as the podcast continues. My name is Jared Reimer. This is Podcast 291. Alright, folks, so I have something else I want to talk about, and that is this whole notion of supply chain issues in regards to technology. The recent Security Now episode talks about the supply chain vulnerability where a company is accused of putting implants, which is a term that Edward Snowden used when the NSA documents were leaked some years ago. And these implants are on cables. Now, when I heard this, I was like, implants on cables. Now, if I plug a USB device such as this headset into my computer recognizes that. I recently got the other USB device because I think there's something going on with the other USB device, even though I have this brand new headset that was replaced because the other one gave out. Now, could I say that that was implanted? No, because I don't think cables themselves can be implanted. So I'm very not understanding this whole thing of somebody putting software or even something else into a cable. Okay, that doesn't make sense to me. Now, software on a drive, and you get infected from a USB drive? Okay, I understand that. But something on a cable? No. Implants in the supply chain. You're being infected in the supply chain where people are doing things to give you a computer. You have chips by one company, the motherboard on another company, and this on this company, and the case from another company, and you get a computer and it's infected. I tell you what, somebody had to have done that. Now, from the factory? Possibly. But this notion of somebody putting something in a cable or in the motherboard, maybe. But I'm still confused about this because of the fact that while I have not read the posts from which Security Now and others have linked to in various articles you can go find around the web, it seems to me that, with as much production as is with a lot of what is being accused from this supplier, they could have a couple of bad items. But to do this to several companies like Amazon and Apple, not maliciously anyway, where things are infected or whatever, and I'm sure that these things, when they are turned on for the first time, like I turn on my computer and it phones HP and it goes, "Hi, I'm at this location now." So that HP knows that the computer was bought, then I have to go register it and give them my information and everything else. So I don't quite get where this notion of various servers and various other things are infected with things. I have a hard time believing this, and I think Steve is right when he says that there could be a bad one out there, sure, but not as bad as we think. Is it possible? Sure. I think it could be possible, but I really don't understand the implants of cables. I heard that, I'm like, well, I have a USB cord. Can it be infected with something? And I think the answer is no. How could a cord? You plug in something to your USB and now it's infected. Now USB drive, okay, but if I plug my cord into my iPhone and the iPhone cord into the computer, right? How is my phone going to then be infected with what's on my computer? That's what I think cable infection is. Now, if somebody has more knowledge of this, I would definitely be interested to hear what you have to say. The infection chain. Is it possible when making different types of supplies? All right, folks, I think there's one more segment I'd like to do, and this one caught my attention as part of Security Now. And it talked about people updating Windows before the second Tuesday. Sometimes they do that to make sure things are copacetic and everything, and Microsoft will post the updates, and whoever finds it manually can download them. And one of the updates I've never heard of before. And they pulled the update and fixed the issue, but it doesn't seem like it was malicious, in my opinion. Now, this particular update deleted everything in the My Documents directory, and if you have the right tools, you can get it back. But they advise that you not use the computer, because if you do, then the drive that the documents were saved on could be overwritten, and the documents could not be recovered. So the advice is sound. It is unfortunate that an update did that. I think this is the first time I've heard of that. And I'm sure that I feel that it was a complete accident. I don't think that they intended to delete documents, and it only happened with a subset of computers. It didn't happen with all of them. I feel that if Microsoft can, they can release a tool that will go through and restore everything, because it was their doing anyway. Of course, there are programs out there that will look, and if it finds files, it can show them to you, and you just tell it to restore. And one guy was mentioned in the podcast. He was absolutely not happy, and I would too. I think that's why, some time ago, I decided not, for my needs, to use the My Documents folder, but to shove everything in Dropbox. And that has proven to be a choice that was proven good to me, because I've gone through multiple computers. I knew I had everything backed up in Dropbox. I've got shared folders that people have content in them, and a lot of it's my own stuff. And I personally have been very lucky that I've not lost data. And I have made mistakes. And some of them could have been pretty big. But thankfully, with Dropbox or another service similar to it, can help in those needs. And so I feel that Microsoft made a mistake. It was an honest mistake. They said, look, this wasn't the intent. We're looking into what happened. We've pulled the update. Then they put it back. And they fixed the issue so that it doesn't happen to anybody else. And several gigs of documents gone for one guy. That's absolutely tragic. And it was unfortunate. Did you hear this story, either through the media or through Security Now, and what were your thoughts? I'm being given a little bit of news that I thought I would pass along to you. I don't have a lot of details, but I have been told that Vorail, the app that I understood to be a dating app for the blind and visually impaired, will eventually be going paid. The price will be $5 a month. I don't have a reason why, but from what I'm being told, a lot of people are not happy with this decision. From what I can gather, the app will have an in-app purchase of $5 a month to use the app. I never personally got on the app myself, and people were asking if I was on it. A lot of topics were discussed, everything from certain types of activities to other different topics of general interest were discussed. My understanding too was that the app was also used to trash other people, like other websites similar to like Facebook, which allow you to basically do anything as long as you follow the law. From what I'm able to gather, this service does not have the capability of reporting abusive behavior, but there is a way to contact the people who run Vorail. Me personally, I never was interested in Vorail, but I don't have a timetable set for when the app will eventually be paid. I understand the people behind Vorail did post something, but that audio is unable to be transferred to us so that we can include it into the podcast. I would like to thank Michael in Indiana for passing along this information, even though it's as vague as possible. I'm sure that other people are not happy about this and people have spoken out about it, but it's up to the developers on what they want to do. My initial inclination from what I can gather is that the costs of running the service is higher than the company providing Vorail can absorb on their own. This makes a lot of sense because they have to store all of that data no matter which provider you use. And when costs go up, you have to make a business decision. There are other aspects that I could get into, including the myriads of harassment complaints the company has seen, to any other odds and ends that they might not be happy with, and for them to say that they are going to charge for it would curb a lot of that. I'm more apt to believe the fact that costs have gone up. They do say they have a button to ignore, and they tell users to utilize that, and they don't do anything about legitimate complaints. I would not be surprised if Vorail was used in such a way where people can post personal information about others and get into all the drama about he said, she said, and start trashing each other, which a lot of the sites allow you to do. I know that Facebook has an option to report content that seems questionable, and it's sent to a team for further review and action based on the terms of service. According to information that was given to me, Vorail does not have terms of service, and as said earlier, the only way to contact them to report such behavior is to submit a report through the app. But as also stated, my understanding is that all they will tell you is that you can ignore the user. It saddens me to hear that there are no terms of service. It reminds me of another service that will not be named in this segment. When more information is available in regards to when the app will go paid and any other information that might be relevant, we will be sure to pass it along to you. Thank you very much for letting us know, Michael, about this new change to a very interesting app. This completes this podcast, everybody. I know that the Facebook stuff was a little bit behind, but I was trying to understand what was happening. And of course, we've got news in regards to Google Plus, and I'm not too clear on that myself, although I do know that I can say that Google Plus is not available to consumers anymore after they discovered an issue which exposed information that should not have been exposed, and the bug has been fixed. But Facebook has overwhelmingly taken over. And of course we do have Twitter, but we also have LinkedIn, but LinkedIn is the Facebook of business, where you can have an account and sign up and basically put up your resume in their tools, and the fact of the matter is that's not going anywhere, even though they did have a massive breach. And I joined after that breach to make my presence known there. You can search me out if you would like.
Twitter, now. FreshBooks tweeted, as gold/childcare sponsored at #PyConCA2018.
So,
we are super excited that childcare will be available for attendees at PyCon at /tutorial.
Let's go ahead and end this program by giving out my contact information. Now, as you know, the podcast is available on LiveWire as well as Ground Zero, two systems ran by TWG Communications, LLC, in an Arizona-based company. My box number on both of those platforms is 2276. And I welcome your feedback. Now, if you're not on that system and you're getting this off the internet, I thank you very much. And I also want to welcome the newest place that accepted the podcast through Anchor. And I got the email on the 3rd of October, and I'm only posting it now. But since we are ending the podcast I got an email stating that we are now on CastBox. And a link to them is available on my Anchor page as well as a link on the blog at technology.jaredrimer.net. Now, we want to welcome those folks, and I'll give out my contact information in full now. My email and iMessage is tech@menvi.org. I never changed the email address since this podcast was originally hosted through menvi.org. Now, if Menvis for some reason goes away, I will be changing the address then. The text and WhatsApp number is 804-442-6975. Again, 804-442-6975. And I can also be contacted if you have me on Facebook, Twitter, and other forms of contact info that you might have gotten from me. You can find me there. I hope to be back with another edition of the podcast real soon. And I want to talk about some of the videos that I've heard that have caught my attention that I said I was going to cover but haven't had a chance to do that. So, it looks like I have to post some show notes to the tech blog for $2.90 since I haven't done that by the looks of it. But that's okay. I'll get show notes up for this and you can feel free to utilize all the contact information available. And I'll see you on another edition very soon.